It is now time for the Rebel with a Cause. Welcome to our first installment of the Rebel with a Cause podcast. I am your host, Eric Williams. Today, I would just like to introduce the podcast to everybody out there and what I plan to achieve with it, what I plan to get across. I like to think of myself as a professional person, but with a silly streak. So I'd like to introduce libertarian philosophy, ideas, and topics, but through the lens of entertainment, some comedy and stuff I like to throw in. I do like to joke around quite a bit, but overall, it's very serious topics, and I think a lot of the ways that we can help our Democrat and Republican, or people who aren't affiliated with a political party, have them all come together and kind of see what we're talking about is through entertainment. A lot of times, if you can get them laughing about a subject or laughing about something that their own party is even doing, then you can kind of, you know, get your foot in the door, the proverbial camel's nose under the tent, and, you know, eventually you'll get inside that tent and you can start to influence their decisions and everything. So with this podcast, I am based in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So I always have an interest in local politics, because that's going to be the thing that's going to affect your life more than what's going on in Washington, D.C., more than what's going on at the United Nations. So when it comes down to politics, you have to look at your local politicians. That's where your tyranny is going to come from. That's where your overstepping is going to come from. So you have to get involved at your local level in order to change things going forward. So one thing that I like to take here is from Brian McClanahan. He's got this thing on his podcast, the Brian McClanahan Show. Think locally, act locally. And if we're all doing that together, then things change nationally and globally too. And one thing, no man is an island. No woman is an island. No person is an island. So if you think that you're alone in all this, you're not. There's other people that are like-minded. Okay. Libertarian Party here in Louisiana, at least, has more than 12,000 people registered. Okay. Now, this is a state of, I think it's about 2 million people, you know, across the state. And 12,000 is a really small number. But if I put all 12,000 of those people in a room, you know, it would fill up a pretty good size hall, a good size theater. You know, that's a lot of people that could be acting together for a common goal and purpose. So the things I like to start off with, we're going to start off with the international news first, and kind of what I see here. It's an article from the New York Times, dated today, actually, July 22nd, 2017. Headline, "The Battle for Venezuela Through a Lens, Helmet, and Gas Mask." And this is a story by Meredith Cohut. I'm not sure how you pronounce that last name, so if I butchered it, I apologize. And she also took some amazing pictures here of Venezuelans gathering in the streets in Caracas, Venezuela. And I'm just going to kind of read the article, and then I'll kind of give my thoughts on it. Caracas, Venezuela. Motley throngs of masked anti-government protesters hurl rocks, fireworks, and Molotov cocktails. The police and soldiers retaliate with tear gas, water cannon blast, rubber bullets, and buckshot. An uprising is brewing in Venezuela. Nearly every day, for more than 3 months, thousands have taken to the streets to vent fury at President Nicolas Maduro and his increasingly repressive leadership. The confrontations often turn into lopsided and sometimes lethal street brawls. More than 90 people have been killed and more than 3,000 arrested. I have worked as a photojournalist for the New York Times in Venezuela for 9 years, and for the past two, I've focused on the plight of Venezuelans struggling with the worst economic crisis in the country's history. I have witnessed their growing anger as food and medicine disappear and Mr. Maduro's authoritarianism intensifies. His government has delayed elections while jailing protesters and political opponents. Now he has called for a constituent assembly to be elected at the end of the month, empowered to rewrite the constitution, which many Venezuelans have called a blatant power grab and threat to their democracy. Mr. Maduro has called the protest a violent attempt to overthrow his government. Demonstrators say that they are invoking their right to rebellion against tyranny, guaranteed by the constitution he wants to revise. I often start my day now hopping onto a motorcycle taxi and heading to the front lines where the tear gas is wafting and the projectiles are flying. I've come to know some of the regular protesters, like Tyler, 22, a former government supporter who has become adept at dodging rubber bullets and buckshot behind a homemade shield painted blue, yellow, and red to match the Venezuelan flag knotted around his neck. His eyes peek from black t-shirt wrapped around his face to hide his identity. We sat beside a burning barricade during a lull, and he told me about his family. Tyler said he was fighting because of the medicine shortages that killed his mother, worsened his grandmother's high blood pressure, and left his asthmatic little sister gasping. He said his family could afford only one meal a day, usually just plain white rice. "We are living with hunger that we have never had before," he said. "Things are already really ugly here, and we won't take it anymore." Tyler joined El Resistencia, a ragtag street protesters who clash regularly with government security forces. Members of El Resistencia say taking to the streets is only the option left. "If they don't kill us here, protesting, we will die either way. Be killed for a cell phone or a pair of sneakers, or we will die of hunger or simply from catching any disease because there is no medicine here," said Marco, a graduate student. "I feel as if I'm inside a video game when photographing the front lines, constantly skipping over obstacles and dodging projectiles whizzing from all directions. Dozens of antagonists get hit during each protest, some evacuated with broken bones and bloody wounds." Unfortunately for the press corps, both sides have less than perfect aim. "We are frequently pelted with rocks, paint, and water cannons. I took a buckshot blast to the helmet from roughly 15 yards that gave me a concussion. Many photographers have fared worse, hospitalized with serious injuries." And the article kind of just goes on, and I'll just kind of stop it right there because it's a little bit lengthy. And the pictures are just fucking amazing. I mean, they got like a picture here of a motorcycle in flames as people are trying to run away. And it basically just kind of outlines this clash of the Venezuelan people against the government. And, you know, they're making makeshift armor out of like rug sample, like several layers of rug samples just kind of tied together. Another picture here shows doctors and nurses standing up because of the medicine shortages and everything. So one thing to take away from this, and it's actually heartbreaking to just watch people being involved in this and having to suffer through this. But one thing that we can take away from this is socialism and the progressive left's love with socialism. We have to understand that they think that this is a perfect system. And the reason why it has failed every time it has been tried is because they haven't had the right kind of leadership or enough money to do what they want to do with it. And unfortunately, with socialism, it doesn't really matter who's in charge of it. It doesn't matter how much of other people's money you have. It will collapse. It always does. It always has. So anywhere it's been tried, it collapses. So Venezuela is just a prime example of democratic socialism, and you can just throw democratic socialism in there if you want and say that it's socialism. Okay. This is what Bernie Sanders wants. I want Bernie Sanders to have a comment on what's happening in Venezuela. Unfortunately, he doesn't give comments about that. So this is a prime example of authoritarianism being at the heart of another collapsed state. So in this case, you know, my heart goes out to those in Venezuela who have to suffer through this, and hopefully they'll get through this. And on the other side of this, Maduro is locked away in a cell somewhere where he won't continue to get fat and having champagne lunches at his mansion and everything. But so I would just ask people just to check out what's going on down there and kind of see. And then you have to broach the subject with your Democrat friends and say, hey, you know, what do you think of this? And like I said, you know, at the top, you know, try to interject some humor into it. You know, in this situation, I don't know if you can. And if you can pull off a joke with it and kind of ease it in, maybe kind of leave that subject alone for a little bit and work your way in there. But Democrats have to be made aware of this, because this is exactly the type of stuff that they want to advocate for: government in control of every aspect of your daily life. And this is what it leads to. Okay. It's not a good thing. It's failed every time it's been tried. There's countries out there that have gone through this and are, you know, going through it now. And unfortunately, it's just apparently a lesson that we've just got to learn over and over again until one day it's not going to be around any longer and people won't say, hey, what about that socialism idea? That was such a good idea, right? Yeah. Well, as we can see, people die, people starve to death, and they can't get medicines that they need. So I'll have to go on from there. All right, so on to the national news. And I just kind of picked this article just because it's a little bit different. And this is from the Orange County Register. I saw this one, and I was like, yeah, kind of knew this one. And the headline is, one way to save the environment from invasive species: eat them. So, yeah, here you go. And this is by Lauren Williams of the Orange County Register. This was published yesterday, July 21st. And let's see, in the here's the article. In an oak woodland between canyons of Angeles National Forest, Pascal Baudar, again, apologize if the name's mispronounced, paused in a tangle of vibrant green shoots of perennial pepperweed and purple blossoming wild radishes that many would consider unremarkable weeds. He saw lunch. Baudar, a culinary alchemist and wild food researcher, has complicated relationship with Southern California's myriad varieties of weeds. Sorry. On the one hand, he savors non-native plants, pickling, brining, and brewing them into hot cuisine. On the other hand, he is trying to make the invasive plants vanish because of the havoc they wreak on indigenous Florida. Indigenous Florida. Freudian slip there, I guess. So he harvests non-native mustard, olive, watercress, and even the honeydew excrement of leaves left by aphid-like flies. As he goes, he often replaces the invaders he harvests for food with new plantings of native species, part of his small but steady crusade to subtly strengthen the region's traditional ecosystem. And I'll just end it right there. You can take a look at it, and of course I'll have all the links and everything in the show notes. So it just goes on to say, if you have an invasive species like this, just, you know, find out what's edible and eat it, and then, like he's doing, replant it with the native species. So a similar thing has happened in the state of Georgia. Practically the entire state is overrun with kudzu. And it's a Japanese vine, and it just kind of grows everywhere, and it's pretty much resistant to any kind of herbicide or anything else that you want to put out there. So people have just learned to live with it, and talking with people from Japan, they kind of laugh, because what they do with their kudzu is they make it into a jelly, and they use it on food. They eat it. So this is nothing new, but this is a pretty good pretty good thing to do with an invasive species like that. You know, other than just plucking it up and then replanting a native species in its place. Yeah, find out what's edible and eat it. Several years ago, I went down to the island of Bonaire, which is, I think, 30 miles off the coast of Venezuela, Caracas. Right. And so we've got one story leading into another. And they have an invasive species down there called lionfish. Lionfish is actually an invasive species quite a lot in a number of places. But it turns out you can actually eat lionfish. Their fins and spines have a venom in it that you can't touch. But if you cook it, you can actually cook the venom out of it. And we had it on a pizza, and I gotta tell you, lionfish, kind of like tilapia, is one of those fish that doesn't have a particular flavor by itself, but you start adding herbs and spices to it, and it'll just take that flavor right in. And it was pretty delicious on the pizza, I have to admit. You know, and it, if you got a little small island like Bonaire, and it, you know, it doesn't have hunting on it, but you know, you can get permission to go hunting lionfish. You know, I don't see why there's more people not down there trying to get those little buggers. But it was actually a pretty tasty fish, and it tasted pretty good on a pizza. But yeah, you know, if you got invasive species coming into an area, it's best just to eat it and get rid of it, I guess. But I just found that story a little interesting to say. Now for the local news in down here in Louisiana. And we just had a big one. Here we go, from KPLC, TV.com. Okay, study ranks Louisiana second worst state to live. And this is by Max McGee. Just a year after Louisiana was ranked the seventh worst state for business, CNBC ranked the worst state to live in 2017. Louisiana ranks second worst. That doesn't surprise me, said a resident, Alex Alamo. I met a lot of people at my job, and they don't like Louisiana. The study's quality of life score is 87 out of 300 points. That's a score of Louisiana resident Jeff Staples disagrees with. I think the quality of life is great, he said. There's great people, great food, certainly a lot of activities to do, so I think it's a great quality of life here. Alex Romero disagrees. I'm sorry, agrees. Getting to the core of deep human need would mean this would be one of the better places to live, said Romero. Harold Warden hasn't lived in Louisiana for 9 months, but feels it is this is home. And the article kind of goes on, kind of tit-for-tat type style here, where you got some people that are against it, some people are forward living here in the state of Louisiana. Living here myself, there is always a lot of room for improvement. And so it links to a study here. And so when we go on to the study, this takes you to CNBC and an article from Scott Cohn. But yeah, Kentucky is 10th. New Mexico and Tennessee tie for 9th. 7th is Mississippi. 6th is Indiana. 5th, Missouri. Arkansas, number 4. Oklahoma, number 3. Louisiana, number 2. And Alabama, number 1. So I'm going to read the Louisiana entry here from the CNBC article. Heavenly beignets, deep fried with a generous topping of powdered sugar, an oyster po' boy with lots of mayo, crawfish etouffee with buttery sauce, and rich bananas foster for dessert. Okay, those are some of the good things about Louisiana's quality of life, but they also explain why this is America's fattest state. It is also among the most dangerous, with the nation's highest murder rate. New Orleans alone logged 175 murders last year, the most deadly since 2012. 2017 quality of life score, 87 out of 300 points. Weaknesses, health, crime, strength, attractions. 2016 quality of life rank, number 47. So, a couple things here. Yes, there is a rich culture of food produced here in the state of Louisiana, because we have basically several different nations contributing to food here. So yeah, you get stuff like beignets and po' boys and etouffee and muffalettas and stuff like that. Take a sip of my coffee. Sorry. And yeah, and it is filled with sugar, grains, breading of all kinds, and it's all fried in peanut oil. And so yes, it's not very healthy food for you to eat. It is, however, fucking delicious. The other reason why it is not a healthy state to live in is because we have chemical plants right in the middle of town. If you go to Baton Rouge, you can, you know, take a look at an overhead map. Dow Chemical is smack dab right in the middle of town. Where I live, there's a power plant nearby and a couple of other chemical plants nearby. And so as much as they scrub out of those stacks to try and get the air quality that you would want, is a little bit to be desired. But yeah, with the food, yeah, I'm on a diet of not eating sugar or grains. So a lot of what I eat is just meat and vegetables. And so when I go to a place and I ask if stuff has got sugar in it, I get the look like I've got a penis growing out of the side of my neck sometimes. It's like, what do you mean you're not eating sugar? It's like, yeah, I'm just not eating it. But with the crime, they kind of hit on the biggest thing. Most of that crime is done in New Orleans. And, you know, this is a state that prides itself on its Second Amendment. I myself have guns. I carry them daily and everything. But I think a lot of it has to do with the drug war. And that can be a topic for another day. But I can tell you this right now, down in New Orleans, that's all gang territory, drug war type stuff. And it doesn't really go into a whole lot of detail for that. But a lot of these others, you know, they list Alabama, its weaknesses as inclusiveness, and they start to rate minority gay and transgender people as being discriminated against there. And since I live in Louisiana, that's one thing that we don't want to beat Bama on, is being a bunch of closed-minded shitheads. But yeah, so the CNBC poll is kind of interesting, and again, I'll put that link in there with along with the other story from KLPC. So like I like to say, but a lot of this can be solved. It's not problems that can't be overcome eventually with proper application of property rights and the non-aggression principle. So I think that'll do it for the very first Rebel with a Cause podcast. It's been great. I hope this podcast gets a lot bigger as it goes on. I'm going to try and do once a week, but I may do more, just depending on if I can find the time or if I get inspired enough to do one during the middle of the week. So for that, I bid you adieu. Have a great afternoon, great day, whatever time you're listening to this. Just make sure, understand that liberty and personal responsibility go hand in hand. Liberty is tough, liberty is hard, but it is worth it. All right, see you guys later.